years ago, London was quite a different city. Many of the neighborhoods that are now vibrant, desirable places to live and work were empty, dilapidated, or simply soulless. For property developer Harry Handelsman, he not only saw the business opportunity in London's central neighborhoods, but the chance to provide some vision and to create places where people would want to live, open a business, or enjoy visiting and catching up with friends. His first project, lofts. Clerkenwell is one of the areas full of beautiful old factories and buildings, along with cafes, eateries, and small businesses, which were legacies of a once-strong Italian community. But there was no real reason to live there. The Summer Streets Lofts project was a jumping-off point for Handelsman and his Manhattan Loft Corporation, and helped drive a boom for the revitalization of London's old buildings. From Clerkenwell to Soho, Bankside, and Chelsea, Harry has overseen countless interesting residential developments, including the standout Manhattan Loft Gardens in Stratford, a massive high-rise project that is not without its critics, but has, in any case, brought great interest and energy to East London. But it's perhaps his work on the Chiltern Firehouse Hotel around the corner from Midori House here in Marylebone and the St. Pancras Renaissance Hotel at London's incredible Central Railway Station that has brought him the most acclaim. You're listening to The Entrepreneurs with me, Daniel Bage. This week, Harry Handelsman is my guest, here to talk about his latest project, Booking Office 1869, a revamp of the bar and restaurant inside the 19th century St. Pancras Ticket Hall, which has been guided by Parisian architect and designer Hugo Toro. The refresh has been done in part to mark the 10th anniversary of the opening of the St. Pancras Renaissance Hotel, and in Harry's words, to create an outpost for Londoners befitting of the vibrant destination neighborhood King's Cross has become. Here's Harry now to talk about his passion for London, and we started by looking back at Clerkenwell in the early 1990s.
So there were great pubs, there were great trattorias, but people didn't move there, people didn't live there. Yet it was so central. I mean, that's what appealed to me. You know, we were minutes from Covent Garden, minutes from the city, the West End, and etc. And there was an infrastructure that existed. So that's really what started the movement, is for me, regenerating parts of London, you know, and that followed by Soho, Bankside, et cetera, over the whole career. And it's really trying to identify location that needed someone that is happy to take the risk of going to a location that isn't necessarily yet in vogue, but by turning and making special, introducing amazing architect, etc., and creating a fantastic product, it turned into vogue. And then other developers were able, well, if Harry can do it, we can do it as well. Yeah. And I think, and I've been complimented with last year, I became sort of quite a catalyst for the, at least original catalyst for changing a number of areas of London. And that's really what I'm interested in. I love the city. I'm passionate about the city. If I wanted to make money, I probably would have been turned into a house builder. In 1992, I had very little competition. The opportunity existed. But unless I was inspired by the opportunity of a project, I simply decided it's not for me, because I think money is an important factor, and especially if you're in development, but it's not the only factor. So let me limit myself perhaps by becoming less wealthy than others, but let me do things that I'm passionate about, because I think at the end of the day, that's what turns me on, and that's what makes me get up in the morning and go to work in the morning, etc. And this is what happened. And because of the reputation that we developed over a number of years, we were approached to participate as the residential partner at St. Pancras. Yeah. So initially, we were only going to do the top two floors. Now, everybody who's interested in architecture obviously knew about St. Pancras. You saw this derelict, incredible structure in kind of the heart of London that most people tried to avoid, because King's Cross wasn't exactly the location where everybody necessarily wanted to hang out of it, especially at the time. But it was an exceptional building. So when we were approached, I said, of course, I'd be interested. Now, albeit it was incredibly challenging, because the top two floors were just little rooms, so we needed to create something far more exciting. But I wanted to have a link to that amazing building, and I felt if I could do that, it would be great. And over time, you know, my partners were B.A. Linton that pulled out, and eventually it was Whitbread that were going to build a hotel over there. Yeah. And Whitbread had the franchise for Marriott, so they're going to build a Marriott over there. And Whitbread was trying to look at the feasibility, the flight, the this, because the location wasn't really that well known. And they asked me, would you mind taking another floor residential? I said, look, I'll take all the floors of residential that you want, because, you know, the attic is really challenging, but yeah. the rest of the room is just gorgeous and beautiful. And as soon as Eurostar decided to move from Waterloo to St. Pancras, it worked as a catalyst and everybody came to it. And then all of a sudden, overnight, it changed when St. Martin's, the school, decided to open up there. All of a sudden, you started seeing really cool people dressed differently, this and that. And it just became this interesting catalyst and change for the whole area. And then obviously, since then, it's become sort of the mecca, the area where a lot of the industry like Facebook, Universal, Google, etc., decided to make it their headquarters. But what happens over all these years, like all these things, is, you know, they develop, they become an integral part of London. And what happened is, you know, new things opened. And what happens over time, obviously, 10 years on, part of the hotel needs to be redeveloped.
Yeah.
And after COVID, or during COVID, I felt that the booking office, that was the place where people bought the tickets, that's why it's called, to go on the train, which we converted into a restaurant, could become far more dramatic than what was converted at the time.
This is the latest project you're opening now.
This is the project that we are going to be opening over the next 2 weeks. Like everything else, it should have been 2 or 3 months ago, but these things get delayed, you know, unfortunately. But there we go. And really what I wanted to do is, initially I worked with one designer, you know, they came up with a proposal a year and a half ago. Frankly speaking, I think it was attractive. It wasn't sufficiently good enough.
Yeah.
Because I wanted to create sort of an intimacy, you know, despite this incredible, huge room. You know, I wanted it to become a mecca. I wanted it to become a destination. But I also felt that King's Cross really needed it. Everybody's there. And I do go there. And there are plenty of places to eat. And, you know, friends of mine have places over there. And I enjoy it. But what I don't feel, there isn't this enormous kind of stylish, elegant, fabulous kind of place that, especially now that train travel is gaining in importance because of all the issues with climate and everything else, and you know, Paris, London, and et cetera, that connection, and Brussels and Amsterdam, hopefully further afield. You know, I just really wanted to create a space within there that marks London as soon as you come in. So we got an amazing building. And frankly speaking, you know, I do have quite a number of arrogant Frenchmen, you know, that always used to tell me, well, Harry, you know, London, but look at Paris, you know. But and my only response was, I get it, and I understand why you like it. I mean, I think London is quite fabulous as well. However, tell me, what do you prefer arriving at, St. Pancras or Gare du Nord? And that's kind of shuts them up, at least for a moment or two, you know. But what I also wanted to do is, within St. Pancras, I really wanted to create this meeting place, this place where people come together, act, feel, you know. We're calling it Booking Office 1869 because it was actually opened in 1869. So it also, it marks it. It gives it a legacy.
Yeah.
And I think it's going to become this incredible place where people will simply come for drinks, will come to eat, will come to meet, will come to think, because we're already experiencing it. Our lobby, the Handsome Hall in St. Pancras, it's just a place. You know, if you're in the area and you need to have a meeting, that's where you go to, because you feel uplifted. And I wanted to create something like that, because albeit a lot of eateries in the area, there's nothing that I feel has the glam. And is glamour important? I don't think it's essential.
Yeah.
But I think in a place like King's Cross, strokes in Pancras, not to have a space like that is something that is missing. And especially a city like London, where you have so many choices and where everything comes together, to have that place that really places it and that becomes a mark, that becomes part of London, just like the building is. You know. And sometimes I look and say, do I really own this building? You know, it's almost unbelievable. And I think it's going to be incredibly exciting. And I think it's going to open another door for Londoners to enjoy, to chill, to be proud of their city. Because my attraction is London. I think England is great. But I feel I love the city. I love its diversity. I love its cultural diversity. I love the diversity of its people. I love its tolerance. I love everything about it. And really what I've been doing for the last 20 years or so, in a small way, try to participate and offer something that isn't done for commercial reasons, but it's done out of care for the city. Of course, the business I'm in requires equity, yeah. unfortunately, and therefore one needs to make a bit of money. But by the same token, that's not what we do, because if we were to do what that, we wouldn't be spending the money. And indeed, you know, my latest project, which is obviously Manhattan Love Gardens, which has now won the RIBA award for the best building in London, I think it's probably one of the best blocks in the world,
yeah.
again, was done because I felt all these high-rises that are being built all over London, yes, they're exciting because they give people opportunity to live here, but I think they're very abstract, they're soulless. It's not really where you want to live. The high-rise is almost how much money can I get and how many foreigners are going to buy there. I wanted to create a building that has a high-rise, of course, because that's what you need when, you know, when there's a lack of space, but it converted into community. And we're achieving that by, again, having one of the best restaurants in East London, Allegra, having a great hotel, and even apartments, albeit we couldn't do them as loft, we offer 20 different style of apartments as opposed to 3 or 4. And why 20 different styles? Of course, it's more expensive. Of course, it's more challenging. Because at the end of the day, in order to attract a variety of people, you need to cater to more than one taste or 3 or 4 yeah. tastes. It encompasses a vision. And I think it's a vision that is turning into reality. There is a challenge about Stratford in terms of its locale, sure. but that is changing. Where else in a location that you're 6 minutes away from St. Pancras by train do you have thousands of the hectares of open land, you know, like the Hackney Downs? I mean, all of those things are just insanely beautiful, you know, yeah. with lake, with its natural wildlife, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I definitely think it's on the map. And for you listeners who are out there, sorry, we are not selling, we're letting. But I think if you're looking to buy, I believe in Stratford.
Well, we'll make sure people have the right links. This, of course, is a newer build in Stratford, near to the Olympic Park. And,
yeah,
and I'm talking about your hopes for that to come along faster, obviously 10 years beyond the Olympics. And I'm just curious about where you start with these projects. Obviously, when you're talking about regeneration, there's two different types. I think we can talk about regenerating a neighborhood with a new build, which you're seeing a lot of in London these days. But you started off more in the, you know, renaissance of old buildings, taking these beautiful things, as you say, and sort of starting with a blank slate there. How do you see that? Obviously, you're involved in both newer builds and working in old buildings like St. Pancras and like the Chiltern Firehouse right around the corner from where we are now. Where does it start for you in these projects? Is it place or is it building?
I think, to be fair, where it starts, is there anything that can do that makes a worthwhile contribution to the city? Since we are, you know, here in Marylebone, why did I do the Chiltern Firehouse? And what I always found amusing almost in London, that in terms of the social activities, I'm not talking about residential activities, I'm not even talking about shops, but the social activities, you know, the fun, the this, the that, all happened south of Oxford Street. To me, there was a sort of misdemeanor. You know, I mean, why is everything happening south of Oxford Street? You know, why not north of, are you telling me it's too far? I mean, all you have to do is literally cross the street. And I really felt, how can I change that? What can I do now? And when I saw that building, I really saw this is a fantastic opportunity. I think this is an opportunity to revitalize an area and to really put it on the map beyond the high street, and beyond just a place to live and perhaps a place to work, you know, where you have some offices and quite lovely offices, but really to make it a destination, to make it more fun. Now, I'm not saying I was the first. I mean, Providor, which was a great restaurant at the time, you know, and I genuinely enjoyed it. And that was great, but that was there was also Locatelli, you know, and George is an amazing restaurateur, but it was sort of in a hotel. I wanted something that gives life, that gives this, that gives the attitude. And in order to do that, obviously, I couldn't do it on my own, because in order to do that, vision is one thing, but it's also the maturity and the knowledge of doing it. So I decided to call Andre. We were looking to do initially with Andre a standard. So we're looking at the place, which is now currently the Corinthian. And we lost it to Corinthian. I told Andre, I told him, when we lost the Corinthian, and I went to see it, and we looked at the firehouse. And I had a dialogue with somebody else, and we could have done something really beautiful. But I told Andre, you know what? I think we might have lost the jewels, but I found a gem. And once you come over, and indeed, and I think together, you know, us being responsible for development, him with his vision, everything else, contact, etc., I think we really created something. And today, you come there early, late, you know, you'd be surprised how many charming but quite sophisticated people say to me, for an after-hour drink, it's the only place I want to go to. I mean, that doesn't say there isn't anything else. And I think London would be incredibly boring if we'd be just dependent on the firehouse. No, so there are loads and loads of places. But the firehouse has something. It creates something. We created something that was then, you know, we could have made it a membership kind of thing, you know, make fortune, everything else. But luckily, both Andre and I, that's not our motivation. Our motivation is to be able to say yes and to occasionally have to say no to certain people, because we want to make sure that the people that come there are the people with appreciation, and the people that work with us feel comfortable, feel they're part of it. And all of that kind of thing requires sometimes a financial sacrifice. And you know what? So what? You know, some less rich.
I think that took 4, maybe 5 years to develop and reopen that site as the Chiltern Firehouse, which is now quite an anchor of the neighborhood and brings lots of great people, you know, helps a lot of the businesses in the area as well. It creates sort of a destination, as you've talked about. But how do you get through that process? And are you seeing the end game of what this can be? Because obviously, I mean, you're seeing delays now in your latest project, and that's normal in property development. But how do you sort of work through that and try to find out what the place will need, what the neighborhood will need in a few years' time?
I think it's a bit early to say. I mean, a friend of mine called me up and told me, Harry, there's an opportunity, which is an incredible place outside of London. I just don't want to talk about it. I'll just give you a notion about it, you know. And I said, sure, let me go and have a look at it. So I went and have a look at it. And it's a great house. It has a commercial value. You know, people come there, you can rent it, whatever it is. But as far as I'm concerned, there's much more you can do from it. And I think what I want to do in the next 3 to 4 months, I want to create a destination in London, outside of London, that does not yet exist. And I want to create something amazing, fabulous. So what is my thought process? Will it work? I'm not convinced, because it's completely new. But by God, I'm super challenged by doing it. And the few people I had a conversation with, they really said, you know what, Harry, I think it's a clever idea. And I think that's really what it is, you know. Is it the thing that if I would have invested that money somewhere else, I couldn't make more money? Very possibly. But could I have the same kind of satisfaction, you know, to introduce something new in the kind of hospitality world? In the world, it's a bloody challenge, because so many people are doing amazing things, you know, at all kinds of price ranges. I'm not saying you have to be luxury in order to be quality, you know. I mean, people do things that are fabulous, you know, because as far as I'm concerned, if it's £10 and it's amazing, it's as good as £1,000 and amazing, you know, or maybe even better, I don't really know. But what I can do is I can bring an ambition. I can bring a thought process. I can bring a certain logic and perhaps some experience to something. And because of 30 years and people knowing it, that a sort of success that I've had is a sort of legacy. And the interesting legacy is, you know, when I finished with St. Pancras, which was financially a super duper challenge, you know, to the extent that numerous times I could have gone bankrupt with it, you know, but I persevered and I didn't ship the prize. On the contrary, I needed to add more money, because in order to make that work, you almost have to spend more, because if you don't spend more, you never get the return. So it was a super duper duper challenge. And people sort of make a reference to me, and the reference to me, which is kind of unique, I think, and they're doing it as a form of critique. You know, Promise Harry, what it does is a labor of love, which basically means, Harry, why don't you make some money instead of labor of love? And now my response, you're absolutely right. It always starts with a labor of love. But in this, in the business I'm in, it has to also turn into financial success, because that's what is required. In you know, if you want to build something, develop something, if you want to refurbish something, it requires money.
Yeah.
And it isn't that I've got rich partners that do it. That's not the way it works. And the reason I don't have rich partners, and the reason I'm not a public company, because I don't want to have the responsibility to investors, because investors will simply tell me, and rightly so, Harry, you're doing something, but we could have got more per share if you did something else. And that's fair, you know, and I don't think it's a criticism of them, it's just the reality of them. So let me do what Harry does in his own way.
You're listening to The Entrepreneurs with me, Daniel Bache. The second part of my interview with Harry Handelsman is coming up.
Dubai Tourism is proud to partner with The Entrepreneurs on Monocle 24. Dubai is one of the most dynamic and innovative cities on the planet in which to do business, and a place where you can enjoy unrivaled quality of life. Dubai should be your destination, whether you're looking to start a new venture or take your career to the next level. Kathy Johnson is the chief chocolate officer of the bean-to-bar chocolate brand Misam, which sources cocoa beans from the historical spice route and has been hand-making its chocolate in the heart of Dubai since launch in 2016. Having grown up in Dubai, she says the city's mix of history, diversity, and excitement for the future are the perfect ingredients for launching a business.
I feel the combined sense of enthusiasm and ambition is my favorite thing about running a business in Dubai. We are this big community of different nationalities, and all of these different people have come together to improve their livelihoods, to pursue a better career, or to achieve something. And that is really infectious. I feel that there's such positivity about what can be done that anything is possible.
Kathy Johnston, Dubai, the future of business is here.
Ten years ago, when the St. Pancras Renaissance Hotel was opening, you spoke to Monocle and said it was the missing jigsaw piece of that neighborhood. Obviously, we talked about how much it has advanced since then. In coming in with this new project, what do you hope it is now? And how do you see your projects at large? Do you want them to be that missing piece of the neighborhood to drive it forward in its development to become a destination? Talk to me just a little bit about how you view that and how you see opening this latest project, the Booking Room.
I think, to me, it's not the missing. It's the obvious.
Yeah.
What is happening is, of course, you can eat. Of course, you know. And what happens is I'm actually going to introduce something that is quote-unquote affordable. You know, it's not like the most expensive thing because it's not really what you're interested in. But what I want to do is I want people to feel proud when they go somewhere. You know, there's nothing wrong with picking up a sandwich in a place and getting this if the sandwich is good, if it's fresh and everything. And I fully understand that. But there's also an experience when you come somewhere and you kind of feel, you know, somebody did something in order for me to enjoy my moment that I'm in this grandiose quality space. And you know what? It's not costing me an arm and a leg. It's affordable. I can enjoy it and I can bring my friends. And we want the kids and we want the taste. We want everybody to be part. And I think that's so, so important because I think too often and for every logical reason, people do things. Of course, because they feel something is missing. But the next instant step is, how can I monetize that?
Yeah.
And there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. For me, what can I do? And then the monetization will come by itself. I could spend half the money on refurbishing, a quarter of the money on refurbishing this place that I'm spending. But I'm spending none because I want to create something that is glamour. Because frankly speaking, and you know, and I think every expert that understands building, St. Pancras to me, is one of the most beautiful buildings and is known to be one of the most beautiful in Britain. I think a building like that needs a grandiose, an amazing place for people to come enjoy their drinks, their food, their breakfast, their lunch, their dinners, their meeting, and kind of feel, you know what? It's accessible. Mm. It's where I can come from. I mean, on a selfish note, I hope it won't be that accessible because hopefully we'll be very busy. But then you just have to book in advance.
Fair enough. Well, we look forward to visiting very soon. I'm curious about that accessibility part. And I mentioned the idea of sort of new build versus refurbishing what already exists in this city. London is a fascinating canvas, as you've talked about. So many incredible places that I notice as someone that wasn't born in this country and gets to discover new things every day. It's fascinating. But there are places that, of course, get people a little bit worked up. And that has to do with this accessibility you're talking about, cost of living. I think of maybe the regeneration of Battersea Power Station and these new buildings that people don't feel they can be a part of or are a part of the community or really add anything. How do you think about that? And
I'm very disappointed. Yeah. I think planning a new build and everything is super disappointing. I mean, and I've said it very publicly, so it's not the first time that I'm declaring. I mean, I understand the commercial logic for it. And what is very interesting, you know, when I developed Manhattan of Gardens, I needed to sell a number of apartments, 40 or so, because the banks wanted me to sell something that just in order to support it. Now, at the time, I was speaking to some agent. They told me, Harry, we can sell you 80, we can sell you 100. It's not an issue whatsoever. You've got a great reputation. You're building an amazing building. I know traffic's a bit challenging, but we can do it. We can go to the Far East. We can do that. And I said, you know what, guys? I'm not interested. And the reason I wasn't interested, because I wanted people to understand what they're buying as opposed to just going to a marketing suite somewhere. Because I went to the, you know, I was curious about this marketing suite. So I went to Kuala Lumpur, went to Hong Kong, and I just looked around and basically almost saw these people walking around from door to door, from place to place, and simply say, okay, it's almost like a checkout counter, you know, which is the checkout counter I'm going to stop and actually buy. And it was all about sort of false kind of, it wasn't even false, it was opportunity. Now, when the market goes up, that's great because they're looking for investment. So I'm not saying, but you know, why not spend a little bit more effort in order to create something that's quite special? Because as I said, and I said numerous times to people, is the benefit of these spaces is that if you were to live in building A and there's a building B built next to you, the benefit is that if you are on the 15th floor in building A and you run out of milk, you can go out on your terrace and you can yell to your neighbor that lives in building 15B and they can actually hand you over a bit of milk. Now, that's obviously something that's very valuable, but I don't think it's that valuable because I think this whole density, this whole sort of thing is just insane, you know. And, you know, and what I built is when I gave my brief to SOM for Stratford in 2009, before the Olympics were even opened. I mean, obviously, we knew it's going to. I told him, I want you to build me the most beautiful building in the world that's residential. It's got a hotel in it. And the reason is because I want to create an aspiration. And I don't create, and, you know, and it's the garden. It's the this. I can show you loads of evidence that what I built is so uncommercial in terms of, you know, how could have done it cheaper, how could have done it more effectively, more this. But you know what happened is, and I know that, you know, it's, I'm not naive, and albeit times are always challenging, especially post-COVID, I walk in and I'm proud. I'm proud of what I accomplished. I stay there occasionally, and you know, I stay there at least once or twice a week, and I'm proud, you know, and I feel good. And I know that the rewards might take a bit longer than anticipated, you know, and I really, that's a fact. I mean, COVID certainly hasn't helped. But, you know, I created one of the best buildings. And I don't think anybody will ever do a building like that. And for the very simple reason, because it doesn't make commercial sense. Mm. But for me, it gives me a sense of pride.
Well, on that point, you talked about what gets you out of bed in the morning and what really inspires you. And you've stayed in London. You've worked in London for many years now and continue to, you know, for people out there that are business owners and are thinking about their next idea. I'm just curious about how you see the city. Obviously, you get out, you meet people, you go see new things and you're inspired. You see a building, you see a neighborhood. Just talk to me a little bit about how you see the city and what might be next for you in London.
I think what is great about London, London's a catalyst. Universally, people recognize the challenge. They recognize the challenge of COVID, recognize the challenge of Brexit, you know, what it brings, etc. But London has an attraction, you know. I mean, people make references to Berlin, where I used to be business, and I'm a fan of Berlin. People make references to New York, and I'm a great fan of New York. But having said that, what London is the world. You go to New York, you see North America. I'm not saying you see inklings. You know, people do call. Oh, what do you mean? I'm French and I live in New York, of course. But how many French people? How many Italians? How many this? And I think in order for a city to grow and for a city to have a life and for a city to have an existence, for a city to have that, is it requires all of that. Today is one of the most successful cities. I mean, you know, financial, in the 80s, etc. But then it just reinvented us, you know, with all the creative industries and everything. And it wasn't that on day one. But somehow it attracted it. Because frankly speaking, if you're aspiring and if you live in Italy and if you live in Spain, if you live in something and I want to start seeing the world, you know, all I have to do is come to London and I get to see the world. I don't have to travel from Budapest to Prague to Berlin to Frankfurt to Paris in order to see. I can come to London and feel it. And I think people feel that. And what I really hope that this Brexit issue will not detract from that, you know, because I think that would be damaging. And, you know, as great as cities are, I think unless they regurgitate and constantly reinvent themselves, they become a bit of passé. London hasn't done that yet, and I'm thinking, and hopefully it never will. But I think it's not a guarantee.
Very well said, and I don't think it could be said better than that. Harry, thank you so much for your time and for being here.
Thank you for inviting me. Pleasure to be here.
Harry Handelsman, chief executive of the Manhattan Loft Corporation. Booking Office 1869 opens later this month in London's St. Pancras International Station. And you can learn more about Harry and his work at manhattanloft.co.uk. My thanks to Krista Blockwa, who mixed and edited this show. I'm Daniel Bache. Thank you so much for listening, and goodbye.